So to get started, as the title of the class is Rosh Hashanah Finding Its Place, just want to first throw out a few overarching questions that hopefully we'll try and answer by the end of this class. Also, the other thing is that there's really like two sides to this class. There's two, I think, separate ideas, which of course are very similar because they're both within the realm of Rosh Hashanah. But hopefully by the end, we'll try and fuse the two. You'll let me know if it makes sense. If not, you don't have to agree to everything, of course. But we're trying to create here because this is like more of a machshava shir, right? It's more of thought than, let's say, practical halacha. So I love that opportunity as well. Okay. I just want to record this. Yeah. Okay, so the two questions I'd like to start with, and maybe have a third. So if you look at the Mishnayos in Tractate Rosh Hashanah, and it's actually a very nice practice some people have where the tractate is four prakim, it's four chapters, and what some people do on Rosh Hashanah is that at each meal they try and finish a chapter, and therefore you'll end up finishing the entire Masechta. Four meals. By the way, it's hard to find that time during a meal to sit down, stop everyone from what they're doing, and actually learn Mishnah. It's usually like a little Dvar Torah is nice, but to sit down and actually learn a whole chapter of Mishnah is not the easiest thing, but it's a beautiful endeavor to try and accomplish on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so if you look at the Mishnayos, you'll notice that the first two chapters, going into the third chapter, it's heavily focusing on Kiddush HaChodesh, on sanctifying the new month. Right, it really has nothing to do with Rosh Hashanah. And then it gets into all the laws of Tkiyas Shofar. Now, the reason I think why Chazal, why Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi felt it important to place the laws of sanctifying the new month by Rosh Hashanah is because Rosh Hashanah is really a Rosh Chodesh, right? It's the first day of the month of Tishrei. And it was even more complicated at the time of the Beis HaMikdash when this is like a catch-22. How do we start Rosh Hashanah if we don't know yet that it's Rosh Chodesh? You can only start Rosh Chodesh or Rosh Hashanah when you sanctify the new moon, but when do we know if witnesses are going to come? Okay, so it makes sense. However, I would like to assume that there's even something maybe deeper, a deeper connection between sanctifying the new month and Rosh Hashanah in particular, and maybe also the laws of Shofar. That's the first question. The second question is just the nature of Rosh Hashanah in and of itself. It seems to be, on one hand, the most prominent holiday for all of us because it's the new year. It is our new year. On the other hand, when it comes to holidays, if you look in the Torah and all the examples that the Torah has regarding Chagim, so it's hard to define exactly what is Rosh Hashanah, like where is its source? Where does it really come from? Okay, so there are, I think, five times in the Torah that it goes through holidays. One is in Parshas Mishpatim. One is in Parshas Ki Tisa. One is in Parshas Emor. The other is in Parshas Pinchas. And the other is in this week's Parsha, Parshas Re'eh. So what's very interesting is, in Parshas Mishpatim, Kitisa, and in this week's Parsha Re'eh, I gave a little glance, and I noticed that it really only talks about the Shalosh Regalim. It really only talks about Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. The two times the Torah talks about Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is in Parshas Pinchas and in Parshas Emor. And very little is said on Rosh Hashanah. See, Yom Kippur, in Sefer Vayikra, you have Achrei Mos Kedoshim Emor. Achrei Mos also mentions Yom Kippur. So at least Yom Kippur, even though it was left out of Parshas Mishpatim, Parshas Kisis, and Parshas Re'eh, at least it has its own feature in Achrei Mos, because the entire service of the Kohen Gadol, it's done on Yom Kippur. So you get that. When it comes to Rosh Hashanah, it tells us on the seventh month, the first day of the month, What do you have? So there's two times it says, there's two different psukim. One, it's a zichron trua. One, it's a yom trua. And that's pretty much it. Now, you're going to say, oh, it's the new year. But it says it's the seventh month, the first day of the month. So Rosh Hashanah, where does it come from? What's going on with Rosh Hashanah? Especially if you want to connect to Yom Kippur. Like, for us, it makes perfect sense, Rosh Hashanah, in regards to the yearly celebration and structure for the Jewish experience. Okay, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, it all makes sense. Okay, but those are our questions. What is Rosh Hashanah's connection to Kiddush HaChodesh? And the other one is just what is really going on with Rosh Hashanah? How does it, where are its roots? Yeah, that's pretty much what we're going to try and figure out. Okay, the other question is, the shofar itself. Okay, the shofar itself. All it tells us is, by Rosh Hashanah, is Yom Trua, Zichron Trua Yelachem. That's three words telling us about it should be the holiday or the day of where the shofar is sounded. However, if you look at the narrative of the Torah, you'll see shofar in other places. In a way, it's not even so connected to Rosh Hashanah itself. We have the Chatzotzros, you have shofar being sounded by holidays, by going out to war. And in the narrative itself, as we're going to see, shofar finds its place in different areas, not so much by Rosh Hashanah in particular. Okay, so let's get started here. I wanted to start with the Tor. The Tor is, he is the son of the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher. I think it says Rav Yaakov ben Asher, ben Rabbeinu Asher. And he informs us of what takes place on the first day of Elul. Thought this was appropriate because Elul is less than 2 weeks away. Okay, and for those who are Ashkenazic Jews, we already feel it in the air because on Rosh Chodesh Elul, we start sounding the shofar. So let's see where this comes from. Okay, so we're going to, first source on the page. So it's Hilchos Rosh Hashanah. This is the first halacha that the Torah quotes. He says, Tanya bepirkei Rabbi Eliezer. It was taught in the chapters of Rabbi Eliezer that Barosh Chodesh Elul, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, Allah Alai Hahara. That it was on Rosh Chodesh Elul when Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, ascend to me upon the mountain. Why? She'az ala l'kabel luchos achronos. Because it was then that Moshe was going up to receive the second set of luchos, the second tablets, the second Ten Commandments. And then the Torah, he adds something here. I don't think, this is not in the Torah itself, but he says, ve'eviru shofar b'machane, Moshe ala l'har, shelo yitu od achar avodas gilulim. So he says, and there was a shofar, the sound of the shofar was passed throughout the camp. Moshe ascended to the mountain so that the nation shouldn't be mistaken once again to go after idolatry. This is a very interesting line. This is a line that if you look in the Torah itself, you wouldn't be familiar with this. In the Torah, when it comes to the second Luchos, which is pretty much we find in Parshas Ki Tisa, and we also saw it in last week's Parsha, in Parshas Ekev, where it talks about Moshe going up the second time. It doesn't really mention the shofar, and we'll see this later. And so this is, it sounds like this is more midrashic in regards to what was going on, what was so important about the sound of the shofar, what did the shofar bring, what attention did it bring to the Jewish people? It was that they heard the shofar, they knew Moshe was going up, so that they will not once again succumb to a potential desire if they were waiting for Moshe and he didn't come down yet. They wouldn't go once again to Avodas Gilulim. They wouldn't go and make a golden calf and serve any idols. So what's preventing the Jewish people from sinning again? Is it Moshe going up the mountain? And therefore, we should assume that they would know better by now. Or is it the sound of the shofar? And I think what's happening here is that it's actually the sound of the shofar is now connected with the process of tshuva, or of being better and withholding oneself from coming to their temptations to do a sin, and in this case, we know too well to not do the sin of serving an idol. And then it says, "V'Hakadosh Baruch Hu nis'ala ba'oso shofar." Not only that, Hashem is elevated through the sound of this shofar. Shenamar, as it says, Allah Elokim b'trua, that Hashem, He ascends through the trua. Okay, so if we just stop right here, this seems to echo another experience that we're familiar with, which is Rosh Hashanah. We always talk about Rosh Hashanah as being the shofar sound is that which elevates God. I think we even say this mizmor, Mem Zayin, I think it's Mem Zayin, L'manatzeach mizmor, Mitzeach, David mizmor, I think that's what it is. We say it seven times, and Allah Elokim b'trua. So Rosh Hashanah is really the time where this feature should be stated. But for some reason, the Torah is already stating this as happening by Rosh Chodesh Elul, by when Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to on the mountain for the third time. Let's just recap, right? Moshe goes up the first time on the 6th of Sivan, Shavuos, comes down, or the 7th, he comes down on the 17th of Tammuz, the golden calf, he breaks the luchos, he goes back up for 40 days, and that's when he's praying to God, do not destroy the Jewish people. He comes back down, and now Hashem says, go up one more time, okay? And he goes up on Rosh Chodesh Elul. It's the totality of the Jewish experience almost for receiving the Torah. You see, it's not so easy to receive the Torah. It takes time, right? Don't jump to conclusions that I don't know enough, I can't study well enough. No, it takes time. Moshe, it took Moshe at least three times going up the mountain. And you would think it was like, you know, a clear understanding by Hashem. But the truth is, the experience of Torah has to be a communal experience. The individual has to study, but also has to be a communal experience. So Moshe needed to go up again so that Am Yisrael would have the opportunity to receive the Torah in its entirety. Okay, but that's our question. Yes. Oh, that's different. I mean, that's Moshe Rabbeinu, right? He was godly at that point. I don't know, like, I feel like Hashem just nourished Moshe with Torah, you know? Lo al alechem levad, or we said in that last week's parsha, it's al pi Hashem yichyeh ha'adam. It's through Hashem, the mouth of Hashem, that a person lives. In the Midbar, even, what was man? You know, how nourishing was that? Was that even like real food? You know, what was man? So we lived off of heavenly food for 40 years, so Moshe could do it for 40 days. But you're right, Moshe not eating or drinking for 40 days, I cannot imagine. But that was Moshe Rabbeinu, you know? Okay, so let's continue. So now it gets to the minhag. Lachain, therefore hiskinu chazal, therefore chazal, our sages, they established, shiutokin b'rosh chodesh elul b'chol shana v'shana v'chol hachodesh, so that they established that we sound the shofar on Rosh Chodesh Elul every single year, and also the entire month. Kedei lahazhir Yisrael sheyasu tshuva. Okay, so now he defines, why do we sound the shofar during Elul? To warn Am Yisrael to do tshuva. Shneamar, as it says in Amos, im yitaka shofar ba'ir vagomer. He says, this is Amos quoting a bunch of questions, like, if this were to happen, would you not do that? So if you were to hear the sound of the shofar, would you not return to Hashem? Okay, so that's one reason. We sound the shofar so that we can do tshuva. Okay, so doing tshuva, that's one thing. But remember, we said you sound the shofar to elevate God. Now you could say, oh, doing tshuva is elevating God. That's the relationship we want. But really, it's also two things. But we're seeing during Elul, Rosh Chodesh Elul and on, we sound the shofar to remind ourselves this is the time to return to Hashem. And then the other reason he gives is, why do we sound the shofar every single day? Kedei la'arvev ha-satan. In order to confuse the satan. This is going to be really important here. Now, who remembers another thing we do to confuse the satan? We actually do a few things to confuse the satan. The Torah is saying we do something by the beginning of Rosh Chodesh Elul to confuse the satan. There's two things we do around Rosh Hashanah time. So one is we don't blow the shofar Erev Rosh Hashanah. So the Satan's hearing it every single day. He's like, oh, what happened? Did I miss Rosh Hashanah? Oh, because the Satan's trying to get us on Rosh Hashanah. Let's not forget that. He's trying to get us. And remember, if like anything holds you back on Rosh Hashanah, all you say to yourself is, it's the Satan. And I'm going to beat the Satan. Okay, I'm going to win this war. So that's just keep that in mind. So that's one thing. The other thing we do is that we do the Tekiah Gedolah at the end of davening. I think that's the thing we do. We do Tekiah Gedolah, so it really confuses the Satans. What's going on? Is this the end? Is this the beginning? All these things we do to confuse the Satan. Okay, so we're going to get back to this. Okay. And then he says, V'chein ha-nohagim ba-ashkenaz l'tkoa b'kol boker v'erev. He says it was also the minhag in Ashkenaz to sound the shofar both in the morning and at night, achar ha-tfila. And then v'yesh mishim arbim lomar slichos v'tachanu nimi rosh chodesh elu ve'elach. And there are those who increase the amount of slichos and tachanunim that they say from Rosh Chodesh Elul and onwards. Really what he's doing here is he's quoting the two minhagim that we have pretty much right in front of us. Rosh Chodesh Elul, we are, by Ashkenazic Jewry, we are very lucky. All we need to do is hear the shofar. Sfaradim have to say slichos. But Sfaradim don't sound the shofar. Just remember that. Sfaradim do not sound the shofar on Rosh Chodesh Elul and onwards. The first time they're going to hear the shofar, well, if they're at the Kotel, if it's a Sephardic meeting, they're going to hear the shofar. But the first time they really go out of their way to fulfill the mitzvah is really on Rosh Hashanah. I remember I was not knowing this, right? You grow up a certain way, you're familiar with something, so you think everyone does this. I remember 11 years ago, just got married, and we came to Eretz Yisrael for a few weeks in the summer. We went to Tveria. We stayed in Tveria for 2 days, but it was already Elul. And I remember I went to a minyan, and at the end of davening, I go up to the guy. I'm like, "Nu, you're forgetting something. You gotta sound the shofar." And then little did I realize, no, I was at a Sephardic minyan or a Tamani minyan. They're like, "We don't do that." And then, again, you live and you learn. But there's two minhagim going on here. So I like to explain like this. I think it's really nice. The sound of the shofar that we've said, it was what? It was to remind Am Yisrael that Moshe's going back on the mountain, and don't succumb to doing Avodah Zarah again. Start doing tshuva. The sound of the shofar was really for Am Yisrael. Moshe didn't really need it. What did Moshe do when he goes up the mountain? So he is, of course, he's going to receive the second set of luchos. But Moshe is really, what he did the previous 40 days, what he'll do these 40 days, it's all a tshuva process to pray for Am Yisrael. See, he's the one doing the slichos and tachanunim. So I wanted to explain that what we do during Rosh Chodesh Elul is a beautiful thing. The whole Chodesh, we're having two participants that fulfill what the experience was at Har Sinai. The Sfaradim are doing what Moshe Rabbeinu did. The Sfaradim are davening, they're saying slichos every single day. Of course, we latch on to them, 4 days or however long we need before Rosh Hashanah. But they're doing the Moshe Rabbeinu, we're doing the Am Yisrael, it's the perfect picture, it's the perfect scene. We're fulfilling Mamad Har Sinai once again. And let's not forget, the conclusion of Mamad Har Sinai was Moshe Rabbeinu coming down 40 days later on Yom Kippur. So we're kind of living every single year this Har Sinai experience based on the two minhagim. Okay, beautiful teaching. It's an important one to know before we enter into Rosh Chodesh Elul, which, as I said, is only a few days away. It's a week and a half away. So now let's get to the essence of the shofar outside the realm of Rosh Hashanah. And the shofar was very prominent by the experience of Har Sinai. Okay, we were hearing the shofar by Har Sinai. Let's see. So we have in Shemos Yud Tes, Perek Yud Tes, Pasuk Yud Gimel, I have here is 13. Let's see, by the first set of luchos, this is in Parshas Yisro. So what does it say? So Hashem is telling Moshe Rabbeinu the entire directive of what you're supposed to say to Am Yisrael. Okay, don't go up to the mountain. Prepare yourself for a few days. You're going to receive the Torah. Let's not forget, all the Jewish people, they were going to hear the voice of God. So the Torah says, Lo tiga bo yad, ki sakol yisakil o yaro yare. This is very severe. He says, don't touch the mountain. You shouldn't touch it. I mean, tell the Jewish people, don't touch the mountain. It's the Har Sinai was like Kodesh HaKadoshim. It was on a level of sanctity. Like, imagine a non-Kohen doing the service in the Beis HaMikdash. Imagine a non-Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So we treated Har Sinai as if it was like the Mikdash. And he said, don't let anyone touch the Mikdash. No one's allowed to touch the mountain. And then at the end it says, Im behema, im ish, not even an animal, lo yichya, they will not live if they touch the mountain. However, bimshoch hayovel, hema ya'alu vahar. However, with the sound of the yovel blast, this shofar blast, and the translation says, when the ram's horn sounds a long blast, at that time, ya'alu vahar, they may go up on the mountain. So that's very interesting. Many times we overlook this pasuk, but think about it. What was the experience supposed to be? It was supposed to be that at some point we were going to hear a shofar sound, and everyone was going to go up Har Sinai. If they hear when they hear the sound, they go up Har Sinai. The problem was that never happened, because when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down, they're all preoccupied with the golden calf, and we never got to this point. We never experienced this pasuk. Okay, let's just put that aside. But the idea of when we hear the shofar blast, that's when everyone goes up on the mountain. Okay, so now let's go to the experience Klal Yisrael had. This is from Pasuk Tes Zion to Yud Tes, 16 through 19. So it says, Vayhi bayom hashlishi, was on the third day, bios haboker, in the morning. What did it say? Vayhi kolos uvrakim, there was thunder and lightning. Ve'anan kaved alahar, there was a very thick, heavy cloud upon the mountain, the kol shofar chazak meod, and there was a very strong sound of the shofar. Vayecharad kol ha'am, the entire nation trembled, asher b'machane, that they were in the camp. So this is around Vav Sivan. This is right before Moshe is about to go up the first time. What do they experience? Thunder, lightning, a really loud shofar sound. They know it's beginning. They're trembling, fear, trepidation. You could even say that's the perfect state to be if you want to do tshuva. Fear and trepidation. I know God is the only God. Okay. And from that point, it was Hashem was going to talk to the Jewish people. This is the real experience. And then it continues, Vayotze Moshe sa'am likras ha'elokim min ha'machane. And Moshe went out to bring the nation to greet God from the camp. And they stood by the foot of the mountain. Chazal, they used this verse to express how it was kind of like a wedding, that like the kala, right? That Hashem, I think Hashem's compared to the chasan, Klal Yisrael is compared to the kala. They went out to greet the kala, right, by Har Sinai. So this is the pasuk that reminds us that every chuppah is kind of like a Har Sinai. And then it says, Vahar Sinai Ashan Kulo, and the mountain, it was filled with smoke. Mipnei Asher Yarad Alav Hashem Ba'esh, because Hashem, he ascended with this fire. Vayal Ashano Ke'eshan Akivshan, and the pillar of smoke went up like a pillar of smoke, like a pillar of a furnace. Vayacharad Kol Ahar Me'od, and the entire mountain trembled. And then it concludes, Vayihi Kol HaShofar Holech V'chazek Me'od, and once again the sound of the shofar went and was very, very strong. Moshe yidaber v'alokim ya'anenu v'kol. Moshe would speak and God would respond to him in a voice. Now there's so much more to speak about just in this small episode here, but you see a repetitive theme. You see how shofar represents strength. It represents this loud boom that Klal Yisrael are experiencing, and it also initiates the beginning of Har Sinai. Okay. So we clearly see the shofar by the first luchos. Now let's look at the second luchos. This is in Shemos, this is in Kisisa, Parshas Kitisa. This is after the golden calf. This is Shemos Lamed Dalet, Pasuk Aleph through Gimel. It says, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, Pesalecha shnei luchos avanim karishonim. Chisel out for yourself two tablets, two stones, like the first. V'chasavti al haluchos, you should write on the luchos, es hadvarim asher hayu al haluchos harishonim asher shibarta. You should write on these set of luchos the exact same thing that you wrote on the first set of luchos, that you broke. He's like sticking it to Moshe, that you broke, right? But the truth is, Hashem was actually very, He was maskim. He totally agreed with Moshe's action to break the luchos. We see that's the last Rashi in the Torah. It talks about how Hashem said to Moshe, Yasher kocha, that you broke the luchos. Okay. V'yei nachon laboker. It'll be prepared in the morning. V'alisa v'boker l'har Sinai. You're going to ascend the mountain in the morning. V'nitzav t'li sham al roshar. And I'm going to be standing there on the top of the mountain. So you already see what's the major difference. In the first set of luchos, first of all, it was all of Klal Yisrael that was experiencing something. And it was that Hashem was coming down the mountain. And Bnei Yisrael were coming to greet Hashem. And this time, what's happening is that Moshe has to go up and Hashem is waiting for him up there. We don't want Klal Yisrael involved at all. We want them totally out of the picture. Okay, v'ish lo yale imach, and no person should go up with you. V'gam ish al yirah b'chol ahar, no person should be seen by the mountain. Gam atzon v'habakar al yiru al mul aharahu. The flock, the cattle, it shouldn't graze by the foot of the mountain, nothing. The second time, it's mamash just Moshe and Hashem. So what's missing here? You do not see any bells and whistles. You do not see any sound of the shofar. And the other thing you don't see is this idea of what we said earlier by verse 13, by verse Yud Gimel, of that at the conclusion, Bnei Yisrael will potentially be able to go up the mountain. None of that exists anymore. It's totally gone. And Rashi says a beautiful teaching. He says, V'ish lo ya'aleimach, no person should go up with you. Which also means that even Yehoshua didn't even go up half the mountain this time. No one went up with Moshe. So look what Rashi says. He says, Harishonos al yidei shayu b'teshuot v'kolot u'kehilot. The first time Moshe went up, it was with loud noises. It was with the shofar sound. There was a lot going on the first time that Moshe went up. The problem is, Shalta Vahen Ayin Ra'a. What happened? The evil eye had like a ruled over them. Because so much was going on, because there were so many bells and whistles, and that the limelight, that was doing things like in an ostentatious way, so elaborate that sadly the Ayin Hara was upon them. Right, we don't want things to be too good. We always say a kanayin hara or a bli ayin hara. We always say those things because we realize, you know, that we got to do things in modesty. But that wasn't the case. It's as if Hashem went out of the way, like Hashem misled us. It was too good. So when we didn't have it being so good, when we were like 40, okay, we had all the bells and whistles. 40 days later, we expect Moshe to be down here. Now that he's not down here, okay, was it all a lie? We need more bells and whistles. So let's make a golden calf. Let's dance around the golden calf. So many good things were happening, or so many fun things were happening. We needed more of it. So Rashi says, no, by the second set, Ein lecha yafa min hatznius. There is nothing more beautiful than modesty. And that's what happens in the second time that Moshe goes up. It's totally modest. It's quiet. People are just waiting patiently. We don't need the big band. We don't need the parade. Nothing like that. Okay, so according to Rashi, we see that in the second set of Luchos, there were no sounds. There was no shofar. Do you remember what the Torah said? The Torah said earlier on that when Moshe went up the second time, he says that v'heiviru shofar b'machane Moshe ala lahar, that there was a sound of the shofar that went through the camp and Moshe went up the mountain. So what's going on here? I thought there was no shofar sound. Why is the Torah saying that by the second set of Luchos there was a shofar sound? Very unclear. Okay. That could just be the essence of the shofar was there, maybe. Okay. But what we have going on here is that the experience, the totality of this experience by Mamad Har Sinai is that the first time around, there were a lot of shofar sounds. Second time around, there was no shofar sound. Now, what happened the second time around? What was the tikkun? What was being fixed, rectified this second time around? And how do we now bring in the shofar when we knew that there wasn't a shofar? Why is it that our experience reliving the third and final time Moshe goes up the mountain when there was no shofar, why is it that we sound the shofar the entire month? Right? Why do we have all this shofar when there really was no shofar in that experience? Okay, so one could say, as we were saying before, the major difference is the sound of the shofar the first time around was all about the bells and whistles. The sound of the shofar the second time around is about tshuva. It's a different sound. It leads us to a different conclusion, to potentially being better. It's not a sound of jubilation and I don't want to say like arrogance, but something very loud and out there. But rather, it's a sound that makes us humble and allows us to be modest. Okay, so this is all great. We're talking about shofar in its connection with Har Sinai, with Yom Kippur, but where is Rosh Hashanah? Okay, so now let's go back for a second. We know why we have Pesach. We know why we have Shavuos. We know why we have Sukkot. The Torah goes into why we have Sukkot. We know why we have Yom Kippur now. Yom Kippur is the conclusion of this entire Har Sinai experience. But where is Rosh Hashanah? Like, where does Rosh Hashanah fall into place? What happened that Rosh Hashanah? What happened the Rosh Hashanah right before Moshe comes down on Yom Kippur with the second set of Luchos? Did anything happen that Rosh Hashanah? I mean, it was a Rosh Chodesh. Right? So what's going on there? Okay, so that's like the big question, the big idea that we're trying to attempt to answer. Do we have enough time? Yeah, we got time, right? Beautiful. So now what I want to do is I want to go totally different, path. Okay, we're going to do, it's like a different shear. Okay, and what we're going to try and do at the very end is try and bring everything together, hopefully. Let's see if we can make sense out of all of this. Once again, we're trying to find, is there another shofar out there? The one that wasn't the loud shofar the first time. Where else do we see shofar? And where else do we potentially see a type of, a similar episode of like a Mamad Har Sinai? You know, we got to kind of keep all that in mind. Okay, so what I want to do is study a little about the halachos of Tkiat Shofar. Not so much, very little. And then, once again, come with a mahalach as to understanding the essence of Rosh Hashanah. What is the purpose of Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah, in a way, is a paradox. Because we call it Yom HaDin, we call it the Day of Judgment, but yet we don't clap our hearts. We don't really even mention sin. I think the only time we mention chet is in Avinu Malkeinu. And I think some Siddurim even change it, right? The first Avinu Malkeinu is Avinu Malkeinu Chatanu Lefanecha, we've sinned in front of you. I don't think we say chet after that point. And I think some places might even not include that first line on Rosh Hashanah. We stay very far away from acknowledging any sin on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so let's see what about the shofar. Okay, so let's go. We're going to do two Mishnayos. We're going to do, this is Perek Gimel, right? We said, only by the third chapter, it's only four chapters, Rosh Hashanah, only by the third chapter do we start talking about the shofar. So Mishnah Gimel or Mishnah Hey. Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah shel Ya'el Pashut. The shofar that we use on Rosh Hashanah, it's from a wild goat and it's a straight shofar, not bent. Upiv mitsupa zav, and its mouth is actually coated with gold. Ushtechatzotzros min hatzdadin, and you have two trumpets on the side. So we're going through how do they sound the shofar in the Beis Hamikdash. And then it says shofar ma'arich v'chatzotzros mekatzros shemitzas hayom b'shofar. It says that the shofar has the longer sound, the trumpets have the shorter sound, because you want at the end to hear only the sound of the shofar, because in Rosh Hashanah, the mitzvah is the shofar. That's the mitzvah of the day. So now, is this reminding us of something? Okay, what they did in the Beis Hamikdash, it sounds like they have trumpets on the side of the shofar. It's a straight shofar. Wow. This sounds a little like the original Har Sinai experience. Sounds like the bells and whistles again. Okay, but that's the Tana Kama. That's the first opinion. Now, probably everyone's saying, I've never seen a straight shofar on Rosh Hashanah. I always see bent shofars. So let's see the next Mishnah. It says, Shava Hayova L'Rosh Hashanah L'Tkia V'La Brachos. Okay, so the Mishnah says that when it comes to the Jubilee year, it's similar to Rosh Hashanah in how you sound the shofar. And that would be, by the way, on Yom Kippur. and the brachos that you say. Then Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda, he says, Barosh Hashanah tokin b'shal zicharim. On Rosh Hashanah, we sound the shofar of the males. U'b'yovos b'shal ye'elim. However, on the Jubilee year, the difference is we sound the shofar of the ye'elim, which are the wild goats. The major difference is that the shofar of the zicharim, the male goats, maybe it's the difference between male goats and female goats, I don't know for sure, but the major difference is that Rabbi Yehuda is saying we use a shofar on Rosh Hashanah which is bent. Okay, and that original opinion we had on Mishnah Gimel said that we use a straight shofar. So the Gemara is trying to understand what is the difference of their opinions. Why is one saying that on Rosh Hashanah you use a straight shofar, and why is it that on Rosh Hashanah, why is it that the other opinion says, Rabbi Yehuda, that on Rosh Hashanah use a bent shofar? Okay, so this is the next source. This is the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah on Chaf Vav Amud Beis 26b. It says, B'mai Kamiflagi, what exactly are they arguing on? What is the, as we call it, the Nekudas HaMachlokes, the major point, the main point of their dispute? So Mar Savar, one opinion, that being the sages, the first opinion, they say, Barosh Hashanah, they say, on Rosh Hashanah, Kama Dechayef Inish Daite, Tfei Ma'ale, Uvyom HaMikipurim, Kama Depashet Inish Daite, Tfei Ma'ale. No, I'm sorry, this is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he says, on Rosh Hashanah, the more a person is dechayef daite, where they bend his mind, that's what it literally means, but meaning they're humbled, that is better on Rosh Hashanah to do. Uv'yom HaKippurim, the more a person, you know, straightens his mind, I guess has a clear thought process, that is better. So what the Gemara is doing is that it's making a comparison. It's saying the shofar represents how the person should be. So on Rosh Hashanah, Rabbi Yehuda would say, we use a bent shofar because a person should be humbled and kind of like bent over. But on Yom Kippur, better to use a straight shofar, let's say by the Yovel year, or even maybe by the Tekiah Gedol at the end, because it's better for the person to be, you know, a straight in thought, I guess maybe more confident. Okay. The other opinion, however, says, Amar Savar Barosh Hashanah Kama Depashet Inish Daite Tfei Ma'ale. Rosh Hashanah, we say that the more a person is straight and, you know, has like a straight mindset, that's better on Rosh Hashanah. Uvataniot, and on fast days, kama dechayef inish daite tfei ma'ale. On a fast day, it's better to use a bent shofar because better for the person to be more humble on those days. So it's interesting, the way the Gemara explains it, the first opinion is explaining the difference between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. The second opinion is explaining the difference between Rosh Hashanah and the other fast days, which means that it might be, even though Yom Kippur is a fast day, maybe it's grouping Yom Kippur with Rosh Hashanah. That's a discrepancy of the Gemara that we probably need more time to try and figure out why did the Gemara say it like that. Okay, but according to this Gemara, we're saying the shofar we use represents the position a person should be in. It should be hand in hand. Shofar and person should be the exact same experience. Okay, now let's do a few more halachos. We'll see something very unique about Rosh Hashanah. So what do we do on Rosh Hashanah? The Shulchan Aruch says, Mechabsin u'mistaprim be'erev Rosh Hashanah. A person is supposed to launder and do laundry and get a haircut on erev Rosh Hashanah. And then the Mishnah Berurah says, Mechabsin u'mistaprim be'erev Rosh Hashanah. Why do we, you know, do laundry and have a haircut before? It's laharos. It's to show she'anu betuchin bechasto yisparach shiotz letzedek mishpatenu. It's to show that we are confident in the chesed, in the kindness of Hashem, that we're going to go out, that Hashem's going to judge us righteously. We go into Rosh Hashanah with confidence. And that's why, I think it was Rabbi Nissel once gave like the beautiful interpretation or just explanation of just the experience of Rosh Hashanah. How could it be that something you call Yom HaDin, the Day of Judgment, that you go with so much confidence? You know, if you go to judgment, if you go to the court, you know, you are bent over, you are worried, you don't know what's going to happen, But for some reason in Rosh Hashanah, we go about Rosh Hashanah with this, we stand up straight, we stand up tall. He says, when we say LaDavid Hashem Ori V'Yishi, that the Perek of Tehillim we say the entire month of Elul, really until Shemini Atzeres, he says the word Ori, that Hashem is my light, he says that that's referring to Rosh Hashanah. Yishi, Hashem is my salvation, that's referring to Yom Kippur. Because on Rosh Hashanah, the light's on us. Meaning, on Rosh Hashanah, we're supposed to actually not acknowledge our shortcomings. We're supposed to bring our best self. We're saying to Hashem, listen, I'm going to put aside for now all the shortcomings that I might have, and I'm going to show you today my best self, who I really could be. That's why I'm going to stand with confidence, because I know that if I am my true self, if I am the Bria that you gave to me, Hashem, that you created, that the Tzelem Elokim, if I can be just that for a day or 2 days, I know it's going to be a good judgment, because Hashem, you created me. I'm special. And then what happens is after Rosh Hashanah, we go and we start worrying about everything we did. Okay. It should be the opposite, right? Right. Right. I think it's like, that's like the beauty of it all, right? It's like we can put a pause to everything on Rosh Hashanah. We don't have to, we give ourselves a break, but that break is authentic, because we're showing that, like, you know, we really are unique. We really are special. Okay, and then afterwards we reflect and we're able to, but you're right, it's the exact opposite as it should be. Right. I mean, a lot of people would say this is the best way of education, Bisman said. You got to build children up. You got to build them up. You got to build anyone up before they can really... And by the way, when you build somebody up and they realize where they could go, then they actually have an easier time acknowledging maybe their wrongdoings. It doesn't hurt them as much. It doesn't define them as much, because they see, I could really be something good. So that's what we're doing on Rosh Hashanah, he says. And then he says, and then he gets to this, he says, makom lo yilbash b'Rosh Hashanah big day rakama umeshi. Don't wear, like... You know, like to the nines. Don't do all of that, because you still have to be humble. Don't go as far as you would on another yontif. Why? Because you still know that it's a day of judgment. Okay. And then there's another halacha. This is the Mishnah Brura in section 583, Sif Katan 5, Sif Katan Hey, where it's talking about all the laws of like the simanim that we do by the meal. Which is also really cool. The simanim we do, it's all with optimism. Every small thing you find, it could lead to, you know, a nice blessing for the year. And then we say, the Rama says, that we say to people, Shana Matuka, Shana Tova Matuka, Alkein Yesh Nimnem Levashel Brash Shana Mine Chomets, he says that people stay away from cooking with like vinegar. I guess it shouldn't be like sour, the food that we eat. Vihine, just the second line, he says, Kol elu ha'inyanim osin hakol l'simen tov. All these things we do, they're done to be like a good omen. Therefore, a person should be very careful not to get angry on these days. But rather, besides for the fact that anger is never good, it also ruins the potential of the day. Because the day is supposed to be like a good omen, it's a siman tov. You should only be happy on this day, genuine happiness with one's heart, and you should trust in Hashem with your tshuva and with your good deeds. So the mindset of everything on Rosh Hashanah is telling us we actually, as the Gemara said before, we should be pashet inish daite. A person should have a straight mindset. But what do we do on Rosh Hashanah? We use the bent shofar. So it's a contradiction to how the Gemara played out why we use a bent shofar. We use a bent shofar because it represents the bent person, the humbled person, the person who's going to bend down and clap their heart. Right? But we don't do that on Rosh Hashanah. On Rosh Hashanah, we say, do not have any vidui, do not clap your heart one bit, do not mention sin at all, just refer to God as the king over the world, sing, wear nice clothing, have good meals, make it happen, have a great day. And then we have the ben shofar, which is saying you have to be humble, we have sinned, right? So what's going on there? That's the paradox that we're living in on Rosh Hashanah. Okay. So I wanted to connect this, maybe to answer the question, is the story of the Akedah. Right, the Akedah is very important. Now, we said before, Rosh Hashanah is very unusual in that we can't really pinpoint what happened on Rosh Hashanah. We always say it was a creation of the world, right? We have a machlokas. When was the world created? Was it created on the first day of Nisan? Was it created on the first day of Tishrei, that being Rosh Hashanah? Was it the creation of man? And we say, of course, if everyone's going to ask you, what is Rosh Hashanah? We'll say it was the creation of man. I agree with that. We should all agree with that. But nowhere in the Torah does it say that. The Torah doesn't say straight out what happened on Rosh Hashanah. All it says is it's the first day of the seventh month, you sound the shofar. So what do we do on Rosh Hashanah? We read when Yitzchak was born, Vayifkad Sarah. We read about how Hashem remembered Sarah. We read it on the Haftar, how Hashem remembered Chana. And the Gemara says, yes, on Rosh Hashanah, that's when Hashem remembered Sarah and Chana. The Gemara also says on Rosh Hashanah, that's when Yosef was brought to Paro to interpret the dreams. So a lot of things happened on Rosh Hashanah. Beautiful Gemaras, beautiful Midrashim. And then we have this other thing where it's not necessarily the day that it happened. I don't think the Gemara says the Akedah happened on Rosh Hashanah. But we pinpoint the Akedah and we say this is going to be unique for Rosh Hashanah. Something about the Akedah is going to be what carries us through Rosh Hashanah. So let's just see a little bit about the Akedah. What happens? Vayisa Avram es'ena vayar v'hine ayil. Now Avram, he lifted his eyes. This is right after the Malach comes and stops Avram from slaughtering Yitzchak. Avram was about to do it. The Malach says, Avram, Avram, don't do it. We know that you trust in Hashem. We know that you fear Hashem. So Avram, he couldn't imagine not doing anything after Hashem commanded him to do something. So he looks around, and behold, there was a ram, another ram, that was stuck in the thicket. His horns were stuck in the thicket. And then Avram, he takes the ayil, he takes the ram, and he places it in the place of his son. Okay. And look what Rashi says. Rashi says, Bikarnav, it was stuck in its horns. Shahayarat Eitzel Avraham. The ram was running towards Avram. It was ready. It was like, I'm here, Avram. I'm going to fill in the place of Yitzchak. However, what happens? V'asatan sovcho me'arbevo b'vi'ilanos. The satan comes and gets it caught all in the tree. The satan came and got it stuck in its path. Right? Wow. Remember, this kind of is reminding us of what we were saying earlier. Right? So what the satan tried to stop exactly what Avraham needed. And we do everything possible surrounding Rosh Hashanah and surrounding the shofar. The shofar is the object used to confuse the satan over and over again when it comes to Rosh Hashanah. So what's happening here? Right? He was about to fulfill his mission. He gets the ayil, the ram, the ram's horns. If you remember earlier, we said, at least it was translated as, "Bimshoch hayovel hemayalu vahar." It was at the when the sound of the shofar when you have the sound of the shofar, that's when the people will be able to go up the mountain. Okay, so here we have a beautiful Gemara, and this connects the Akedah to Rosh Hashanah. Amar Rabbi Avohu, Rabbi Avohu says, "Lama token b'shofar shel ayil." Why do we sound the shofar of the aisle, of the ram? So Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Tik'u lefanai b'shofar shel ayil, sound for me the shofar of the aisle of the ram, kidei she'ezkor lachem akedas Yitzchak ben Avraham, in order that I will remember the akedah, the binding of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. And at that point, umale ani aleichem ki'ilu akartem atzmechem lefanai. And at that moment, when you do that, when you sound the shofar, I will see within you, within all of Klal Yisrael, as if you bound yourself for me on this day. Now it's interesting, the Gemara says, Yitzchak ben Avraham, Yitzchak the son of Avraham. Usually it would have said in the Gemara, Yitzchak Avinu, right? But it clearly in this episode, it defines Yitzchak as being the son of Avraham. So there's something very unique about the episode of the Akedah, which is, and this is kind of an idea that was formulated by Rabbi Foreman, is that Avraham goes through the mission. He's willing to go through everything. He's willing to fulfill Hashem's command, all without telling Yitzhak what's really happening. And even when Yitzhak says, Avi, like, what's happening? And we have the wood, we have the fire, but where is the sacrifice? And Avram says, Hashem will show us a sacrifice. He'll show us that. He never tells Yitzhak what's actually going to happen. So the whole entire time you can imagine, let's just try and put ourselves in Avram's shoes. I have to carry two polar opposite emotions as I'm walking up this mountain. I can't really say anything to Yitzchak, because if I really address Yitzchak, if I try and have a nice conversation with Yitzchak, I'm done. I'm going to start bawling. I can't really confront my son Yitzchak, because I know what Hashem wants me to do to him. And that's, there's very little that's said between Avram and Yitzchak. It's such a short conversation that they have. All it is that, you know, are you here, my father? And he says, yes, I'm here. You know, it's so short. So every step they're taking up that mountain, you can imagine how anxious and how difficult and how horrible it feels for Avram, knowing what's about to happen. But he has to mask himself as being a genuine father who is just walking up a mountain, going on a teyul with his son. Inside, he's pained. It's excruciating pain, but on the outside, what does he have to do? He has to show that I can stand up straight, I can walk straight, I could be my best self as a father, even though I know what I have waiting for me. Chazal do say that at some point they both knew. At some point they both knew. When it says Vayelchu Shneim Yachdav, the first time it says Vayelchu Shneim Yachdav, they walked together, it was that even though Avram knew what he was about to do, they could still walk together. And then the second time Rashi says they walked together, that even though Yitzhak figured it out, they still walked together. So even better, you have a father and a son walking together, knowing what's happening on the top of the mountain, but yet they're still walking together. And they're still not letting the reality of what might be, or we could say the reality of what was, right, the tshuva process, get to them at that moment in time. And that's when you have the challenge of the shofar coming in. When the aisle was going to come in, what's the essence of the shofar? And specifically, the horn of the ram, the bent horn of the ram, it's that the shofar does all the talking for us. At that moment, the shofar did all the talking for Avram and Yitzchak. We couldn't say anything. Avram is like, they couldn't say anything really to each other. But it's a shofar that did everything. They walked straight, but the shofar gave the most sincere, heartfelt cry of, how are we going to do this? How are we going to go through this? And in a way, that's when we sound the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, that's what we're doing. We're saying that the paradox of us just standing there, not mentioning any sin, not really being true to ourselves, even though we're trying to be true to ourselves, the Ben Shofar says, I'm going to be here for you. I'm going to be the voice that you don't have on this day. I'm going to be the one talking for you. So that's one of the essence of Rosh Hashanah, is why it's so connected to the Akedah, the idea of that the Shofar does all the talking on the day that we can't talk ourselves. So let's try and bring this back to what we were saying before. It's a hard task, I think. Let's try this. I'm going to try and put all the pieces together. How does this come back? Where we had the Satan, the idea of that Kiddush HaChodesh, the idea of Kiddush HaChodesh. Right? We said Rosh Hashanah has no place. Rosh Hashanah has no place in the narrative of, in the process of our history, of our experiential history as a people. But maybe what's happening is, and remember, what did we say, that there was a certain point where Klal Yisrael, they were supposed to go up the mountain. If they just heard the sound of the shofar, if they didn't make the Egel Azav, if they would have heard the sound of the shofar, they would have gone up, they would have been with Moshe Rabbeinu, it would have been so beautiful. Who even knows what we would have been like if we received the Torah, we all went up Har Sinai, what would that experience have led to for our future? From that point, we would have gone straight into Eretz Yisrael. So there was a shortcoming. We failed. It was an episode we don't want to look back to. What was the first mitzvah the Jewish people had? The first mitzvah we had was the Kiddush HaChodesh. It was sanctifying the new month. And what did that represent? It represented that we had the power to determine our own time, our own holidays. And it was also set into motion by who? By Moshe and Aaron being the ones going out and being the ones sanctifying the new moon. So that first mitzvah that we had, how was it continued from the first time on Nisan forward? So you have Nisan, you have Iyar, you have Sivan. It could be that Moshe and Aaron continue to sanctify the new month. Then it gets a little tricky, right? Because you have Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, Moshe's on the mountain. Who's sanctifying the new moon if the Beis Din of the Jewish people is up on the mountain? I don't think anyone is. Now, you could say, by the way, you can ask the question, you say, what am I talking about? It was only sanctified in Eretz Yisrael. So maybe there was no sanctification whatsoever. It could be, and that would just totally uproot everything. But in the Midbar, maybe it was a little different. But the potential for it, let's see. So then you have Rosh Chodesh Av. I think Moshe wasn't he also on the mountain, Rosh Chodesh Av? And then you have Rosh Chodesh Elul. The show Elul starts, Moshe's still down. He's going up the mountain. So maybe what was potentially the Kiddush HaChodesh, the sanctifying the new month, was it the shofar? That original shofar that everyone heard. Okay, this, we're sanctifying something. The shofar, we're going to sanctify something. And then comes 30 days later, when that original shofar sound was having an impact on the Jewish people to do tshuva. Okay. But then you had Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. Maybe what's very significant about Rosh Chodesh Tishrei is its connection to bringing back the essence of what the original Kiddush HaChodesh was supposed to be. You know, maybe Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, it's like the new year to start over with what the first mitzvah was supposed to be. Why? Because Klal Yisrael was in a beautiful state. They were in a state of purity from all the tshuva. So now Hashem says, sound the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Ready to start all over again. So Rosh Hashanah, after 7 months, right. And they're able to start all over again. But this shofar that we're going to hear on Rosh Hashanah is not like the shofar you were hearing on Elul. All that shofar that we were hearing for a month was all about tshuva. This Rosh Chodesh, that being Rosh Hashanah, which I don't know what happened when Moshe was still up on the mountain, but they were ready for it. This is the Rosh Chodesh we were ready for. We can start over again. It's like a new process. That's why I think there's such a parallel between, what do you have? When we left Mitzrayim, it was Rosh Chodesh. 10 days later, we had the Karban Pesach. We got it ready. And then you have 4 days later is Pesach. Look what we do every single Elul. We have Rosh Hashanah. 10 days later, we have the Yom Kippur, which we can go into another shir saying it's kind of like the Karban Pesach. It's like the atonement that we're finally showing our commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then 4 days later, we have Sukkot, which is compared to Pesach a lot. But this Rosh Hashanah, this Rosh Chodesh, is filled with the tekiah of the Akedah. It's filled with the tekiah where, yes, both father and son, who represented the entire Am Yisrael, were able to go up the mountain together, which we always want in Klal Yisrael to have the opportunity to do. And we're able to relive it once again. And what did we do? We've been able to, all this time, we're so focused on confusing the Satan, because the Satan was the one that was always getting in the way of us. Not only that, another Medrash says, why did B'nai Yisrael start with the Egel Azav? Because it was the Satan who showed them a picture of Moshe dead. He didn't come down. The Satan confused them to originally have that problem of that, oh, Moshe's not coming down. So we're saying, you know, the Satan was always getting in our way. We have to beat the Satan. And we're going to do everything possible through the tekios that represented and that do represent the Kiddush HaChodesh of Tishrei. Every other month, it's somebody coming and saying, I saw the new moon. It's not so much that we don't say Birchas HaChodesh the Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah.
because it's about the shofar. The shofar is the one. That new sound, it's the sound of a voice that we always sincerely wanted to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And one could say also that as Moshe fulfills 30 days and the 10 more days, we're ready for Moshe Rabbeinu coming down. It's like Klal Yisrael had that final cry to Hashem. That the last 110 days, Hashem, we've had such a, it's been such a sad process, but we're ready, Hashem. We are ready, finally. We are ready on that Rosh Hashanah. So maybe that could be the essence of where Rosh Hashanah finds its storyline within the Har Sinai experience from start to finish. Even though the Torah doesn't say it out, but it says it's the Yom Teruah. It's a Zichron Teruah. It's the Teruah of the Akedah. It's the Teruah that makes up for the Teruah that we lost when we didn't ascend the mountain. So Mirtza Hashem is, as I said before, these are ideas we're trying to put together. I still think there's a lot more to figure out, okay? But we've shared and floated and let float a lot of ideas that I think can Mirtza Hashem enhance our experience this year. Everyone should have a successful Chodesh Elul and a Shana Tova Umetuka. We should have a wonderful year ahead where the Mirtza Hashem will be the sound of the shofar of the Mashiach bringing Achdus and allowing us to experience the beautiful Yitzchak ben Abraham that Hashem saw on that day when they went up together. Thank you.